Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday afternoon. Donald Trump recently named the chair of Breitbart Media, Stephen Bannon, to lead his campaign. And Ken Stern, president of Palisades Media and the former CEO of NPR, author of the forthcoming book Republican Like Me, met with Bannon over this summer, interviewed him a couple times, and has written about those conversations, Breitbart, Bannon, and the master plan for the Trump campaign, and perhaps some kind of organization after the campaign is over. Ken is joining us this hour of the program, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for him. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Hillary Clinton, you're probably aware, will soon be speaking about the alt-right, Breitbart is considered, and Bannon a part of that. She will talk about that and released a television ad just a few hours ago on the alt-right. So we'll be discussing what that movement is as well. I told you a little bit about Ken. Let me tell you a little bit more. He leads the creative and business teams at Palisades Media. He is author of a forthcoming book we told you about. He's also author of With Charities for All, Why Charities Are Failing and a Better Way to Give. He's a frequent contributor to The Atlantic, Slate, The Daily Beast, The Washington Post, and The Chronicle of Philanthropy. And we thank you very much, Ken, for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Ken.
Yeah, good day to have you on the air. So, Evan, you say at one point that it's hard not to like this guy. The way he responded to your email would make you kind of like him right off the bat, didn't it?
Yeah, so I'll tell your listeners a story. So I'm writing a book about my book, A Republican Like Me, is actually a trip through the conservative world from the perspective of a lifelong Democrat, actually. So me reaching out, I often find it hard to get people to pay attention. But when I emailed Steve Bannon, he replied to me instantly, literally instantly, said, you know, I asked him, what do you mean? He says, dude, 24/7, 365, anytime. And I was with him 48 hours later. And he is, you know, he's obviously a very controversial figure, but I have to say he was gracious to me, engaging, and that's why I said in my Vanity Fair piece, he's hard not to like, at least in person. Philosophically is a different matter entirely.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about his background in a moment. You write early in the piece, it came as a real shock to many that Steve Bannon was the new campaign CEO, but on another level, you say, no surprise, for years there's been a political symbiosis between Trump, Bannon, and Breitbart Media. What is it?
So Breitbart, to me, has created essentially the Trump army before Trump. Actually, the relationship between Bannon and Trump go back. Trump's been a frequent guest on Bannon's radio show. But Breitbart, at least for the last couple years, has really been the forefront of creating this, what some people call the alt-right. I'm not sure if that's the right term or not. It's being bandied around a lot. But they've essentially created this anti-establishment movement, anti-immigrant, anti-trade, anti-globalism, lots of antis, that really foreshadowed Trump's rise. So when Trump came down that escalator at Trump Tower and started talking about immigration and other issues, he found a very large audience in the Breitbart audience that was ready for him.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned 1.3 million unique visitors to Breitbart just in the month of June.
No, that's 13 million.
I'm sorry, 13 million. Yeah, it's even larger. Whoa.
The numbers for July are 18 million.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's not even, that doesn't even capture it. So this is, I mean, the piece came out the day that Bannon was announced, but actually we've been writing it for a couple weeks with Vanity Fair. And the theory of it was that this is the most important man in media you've never heard of. And I woke up on the day of his announcement and found that everyone had heard of him. So it was a quick turnaround. But the Breitbart audience is not only big, 18 million, but that's not uniquely big in the media world, but it's very deep. I mean, the people who are there are really there. They're, you know, in radio terms, P1s. They love Breitbart. So that the social media numbers around Breitbart and the time spent with it is off the charts. I've seen rankings of social media political websites that has put Breitbart number one in the world, ahead of BuzzFeed and Huffington Post. And they say they're the third most commented site in the world. I don't know who's one or two, but they play in a very big, very intense political field.
Mm-hmm. And knowing you were going to be on the air, I recently have been paying a little bit more attention, not a whole lot, I must confess, to Breitbart. You've pored over it. What kinds of stories are they giving their followers?
So if you read Breitbart, two things really have always jumped out of me. Breitbart's been around now for 6 or 7 years, so there's a whole history there. But if you spend time on now, two things jump out to you. One is the electricity around their headlines. I think they've perfected the get-you-angry headlines. The stories themselves are often actually fairly straightforward, but the headlines are designed to blow people's hair off or heads off. And if you read Breitbart, you know, to me as an old media guy, a lot of what media does is choose the right stories and find story balance. They have no interest in that. If you read Breitbart, the world's being taken over by Black Lives Matter, by Muslim immigrants, by Muslims, by immigrants who are killing and raping your family. That's really the world of Breitbart. And, you know, there's a consequence of that editorial choice about what people think and who it attracts.
Mm-hmm. And you confronted Bannon with some of the, if you read the comments in a lot of news these days, but the comments that people write in Breitbart may be quite offensive to a lot of people. You were a bit shocked, I think, by some of the comments, and you confronted Bannon with some of the fairly racist comments and really angry comments that were directed to stories. How did he respond to that? And without saying the words that were used in the comments, what kinds of comments are there?
So it's hard to describe those comments in polite society,
right,
and certainly on air. Truth, you know, and you're quite correct, Kathleen. There's a lot of you know, awful material on comments around the world, comment boards around the world, but Breitbart has jumped out. I spent a lot of time for my book on Breitbart and on their comment board, and it is notable to me for the anger, the racism, the notion of us against them, and us largely being a white male perspective, and everyone else being sort of non-Americans to this group. The hatred of the Republican, the hatred of Democrats, the hatred of the Republican establishment, who's actually enemy number one. That's what you find there. And when I shared with some of these comments with Bannon, who I've heard on the radio, I've read some of his writing, I've listened to his radio show a lot, and he's never made comments like that on air. You see actually sort of a response that's actually been played out in the Trump campaign. So, I mean, to me, sort of the challenge to Bannon was, I don't know whether you are a racist or not, but you're definitely race baiting in your website.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond to that? And he didn't really respond to that, other than to sort of in reflection in the end say, you know, try to make the argument to me, just as Donald Trump's now trying to make, is the positions that we are taking on Breitbart are not just good for the white working class. They're the positions that help all people who are being exploited by the elites. So to him, it's the working world versus the elites.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, his view is we will win when blacks and Hispanics come to us and identify with us as the working class, not just with their own ethnic group.
And, of course, Trump has been making efforts in that regard, starting really in Milwaukee with the police violence and the riots that took place a couple of weeks ago here in this city, talking about how the minority community in this town, you know, has problems and they need law and order, et cetera. It's hard to believe. And is it Bannon who's guiding him in that direction that he's going to get? He pulls zero among African Americans in several states. Is it really realistic, and is Bannon guiding him to let's try and get minority votes?
Your guess, Kathleen, is good as mine on that. I actually suspect that, and others have said this, I think both Bannon and Trump are very smart people in their own ways. I don't think they can really expect to win any material amounts of Black or Hispanic audience, and certainly not win that audience over in 9 weeks or 11 weeks. I think they're softening the edge to make it more palatable to white audiences who might be sympathetic to some of the policy positions because they've raised some real issues, but are turned off by the harder edge of some of the race baiting that's gone on at Trump and Breitbart over the years.
Mm-hmm. When you look at the comments, when you've read the site, this anti-immigrant, and he really built his whole campaign on that, to be changing on that particular issue, which he appears to be doing, it would think to me would turn off a lot of those very voters who are concerned, working class white voters who are concerned about their loss of jobs. A lot of the blame has gone to immigrants and also a message about crime that's coming into the country. Is Bannon guiding him on that? And how can you give up, do you think? I wonder if you had a chance to ask him about this, but I know the interviews were before this recent change of heart. How can you change your core message?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question. And Bannon himself, I think, is even harder on the issue than Trump is. He said to me, and I still have a little bit of trouble believing he said this, but he did. He said to me that he's against immigration. He's not against illegal immigration. He's against immigration. Hmm. The notion that we have enough problems at home, let's solve our problems. You hear that statement from time to time, but it's basically he's a hardliner of America for Americans. But I'm guessing that he's a cagey operator, and the Trump-Bart people aren't going anywhere. They're in the bag for Trump, and I guess they see little risk in softening the message and shifting grounds a little bit.
You write that Bannon is still a political novice, an odd choice to run a campaign badly in need of message and organizational discipline. Why was he chosen?
Well, I woke up that morning, surprised as anyone else, so hard to know. I actually think, and I've made this argument a bunch of times, that the Trump campaign is less about beating Hillary and more about beating the Republican establishment and establishing a new central voice within the Republican Party on a permanent basis. So if you look at the last 6, 8, 10 years, one of the pivotal fights in American politics is not between R's and D's or left and right. It's between the alt-right or the insurgent right, as I tend to think of them, and then what they call the GOPE, little e, the GOP establishment. And I think a lot of the calculus, at least from Bannon's side and probably from Trump's side, is how do we have a voice that makes this a permanent revolution in the way that, and not have the same thing the way the Tea Party sort of jumped up in a great insurgent movement within the Republican Party and then completely fell apart. So I think that's what they have their eye on, is how to permanentize this. Can the alt-right become the right?
Mm. And a media component, expanded media component beyond Breitbart to gather that support and to give the message?
You're referring to the speculation out there that Trump, if he loses, will then band with Bannon and Roger Ailes and start a new or build a new media empire. I've never been impressed with that. Who knows? But I've never been impressed with it. I mean, starting with the notion that Bannon and Ailes probably hate each other. Breitbart hates Fox and Fox hates Breitbart. So they're not natural allies. Bannon already has his media empire, as we've discussed. It's quite powerful and it's growing. Trump can get access to media anytime they want.
He sure can.
Yeah. It's really, to me, it's not about a media empire. It's about a political movement, which Breitbart really is, and how to establish that. And there may be media components in it, but that's secondary to how do they turn this into control of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm. And it is true, people just didn't see this coming, did they, with what happened with Trump and also with Bernie Sanders, that at least up to now, given voice to millions of you, as you write, mostly working-class white voters who were anguished, and probably understandably so, about loss of status, loss of certainty, and the diminishment of a long-cherished way of life.
Yeah, and I think that's we need to put some perspective on this. I've seen a lot of reporting about Bannon and Breitbart and the alt-right in the last week. It's very current. And it's all true, and has many awful perspectives, but it also has tapped into real pain in the country. I was in eastern Kentucky last month as part of reporting for my book, and if you go to coal country, which has been exploited for 75 years, and most of its profits and resources expropriated out to different parts of the country and not reinvested in Kentucky, and now seeing the death of coal, you see real anger, and when you see real anger, you see people looking for villains, and someone to take up the cudgel on their behalf and say, you know, those are the people who have done this to you, let's rally. And they've tapped into that real pain that a lot of people have.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about Bannon's radio show. I haven't heard that.
So Bannon's actually an interesting character. So his title is executive chairman of Breitbart, and he uses that title, executive chairman, all the time, which I find somewhat comical at some point. But he's in charge of the company, and it's a 100-person company with a real business, and he runs their daily editorial meetings, and he does a 3-hour radio show every morning on that's carried on the Patriot Channel on Sirius XM. And he's actually pretty good. It's actually impressive that he can pull off a 3-hour radio
show. That's a long
time. How hard that is.
Yes.
And he does these other jobs. So it's a call-in show. It has people from around the country, and it's pretty good. And he's quite facile with a lot of different topics.
Big audience?
I don't know. It's not, the satellite radio doesn't really report numbers in the same way that terrestrial radio does. I will say, I don't know if it's a big audience, but it's an engaged audience, because I've actually sat in on the show a couple times and sat with the producers, and the lines are lit up with dozens and dozens of people calling in trying to talk to Bannon and trying to talk to his guests.
Oh.
Trump's been guests, he gets significant guests, so there's something there.
Well, our lines will light up for you, too, Ken, in just a few moments, no doubt about that. Yeah. And before we get to the phone calls here, let's talk a little bit more about he's an unlikely head of this organization, which is anti-establishment, anti-those at the top, because he's a graduate of Harvard's business school.
Yeah. Well, so he's a bit of a contradiction in terms. He was born to a working-class family in Richmond. His father was was a lineman for the phone company, and back in the day when there were such things as linemen. So he grew up in, a working-class world. He became he went into the Navy, I believe, the first person in his family, not in the military, but who was an officer. He went to Harvard Business School, and then he went to Goldman Sachs, of all places, and climbed the ladder of Goldman Sachs to become a senior executive there. Then he branched on his own, launched Bannon Company with a bunch of ex-Goldman folks, and got quite wealthy. And that led him to invest in conservative movie making. He did the movie about Sarah Palin, which I think was called The Undefeated, and that's how he got to meet Andrew Breitbart and became Breitbart backer, and ultimately Andrew Breitbart's replacement when Andrew died in 2012.
Did you ask him about Sarah Palin?
I didn't.
Well, we're going to welcome phone calls for you. Our guest is Ken Stern, and Ken wrote a piece that's in the August issue of Vanity Fair that's about Steve Bannon and about Breitbart and about Donald Trump and about the alt-right movement, which people are starting to hear a whole lot about. Hillary Clinton is going to give a speech on the alt-right movement today, and she's starting a television ad about it as well. Our phone number for questions you have about Bannon, who's now the CEO of the Donald Trump campaign, why he was chosen. Does it strike you as an interesting choice? Were you shocked by the choice? The Voice and 18 million visitors to the site in the month of July, which is a large number of people. What happens to that movement even if Donald Trump loses in November? Is it the start of a real alt-right movement in this country to challenge the Republican Party and maybe even some of the Democratic Party, which it appears that Donald Trump is trying to reach out to right now with some of his comments about trying to get African Americans to vote for him and some of his comments Biden's changes in position, which we'll hear more about soon, his stance on immigration. Here is our phone number. We'd love to hear from you, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Ken is the creative and business team leader at Palisades Media Venture, author of a book that he's working on right now, Republican Like Me. He's also a frequent contributor to The Atlantic, Slate, The Daily Beast, many other publications, and was CEO of National Public Radio for some years. All right, we'll be with you momentarily on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Phone number now for Ken Stern is 800-486-8655, and we start our calls with Andy in Minneapolis. Hi, Andy.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Doing great.
Good.
Just driving down to Minneapolis from Grand Marais. I got my fiance driving, so I call in.
Great. Okay. What do you have to say, Andy?
I was just wondering. I mean, I just actually heard about the alt-right movement. I know it's been around for a while. You've been talking about it on the radio. But, you know, I know Hillary Clinton's about to she's put out a campaign ad, or she is, and she's going to do a kind of speech on the alt-right movement. And my question is it a joke? I mean, is it really a joke? Donald Trump, you know, all these people are going to follow Donald Trump into the election, and, you know, he's flipping and flopping, just saying things that, you know, just to get the voters and try to pander. And, you know, now he's trying to kind of take the edge off his rhetoric so he can try to get maybe some more minority votes, which probably isn't going to happen. But are these people who are like a diehard, you know, they truly believe in their movement, are they really going to follow Donald Trump into this basically execution chamber, I'm sure, you know, leading up to the election? Because he's not going to be able to capture enough vote to actually do this. And I feel like it actually may hurt their movement.
So I think it starts off with a question of what is the movement? Because, I mean, the alt-right is a very, which most people haven't heard of before last week, and now seems to be on everyone's list. No one really knows what that is. So to me, it's really the politics of grievance more than a coherent political philosophy. And, you know, there are a lot of, just as there are on the left, there are a lot of angry people on the right who are angry as much at the Republican establishment as they are at the Democratic establishment, and they will follow Donald Trump, and, you know, they will go down with that ship. But the question, I think, is what happens after, you know, the first week or the second week of November? Does it become a significant part of the future of the Republican Party or not? And I think that's probably what the critical question is, not will it capture the White House? That seems unlikely to a lot of people, but are they going to be a pivotal part of the Republican Party and become what the Republican Party is, which is quite different than what the establishment and the neocons and other components of the Republican Party would want it to be.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Andy, for your call. 800-486-8655 is our number. Why is it that is there something that differentiates those people who are attracted to Breitbart and to Trump versus those who might have been attracted to Bernie Sanders, when some of the core belief resonates with both, I think, as you write about it, a wild, corrupt ruling class of both parties, yeah, abandoning American workers in favor of policies that line their own pockets and the pockets of corporate interests? Certainly Bernie Sanders talked about that as well, and a lot of Americans are mad about that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. They're both sort of against what I think it was the party of Davos. And this sort of notion of globalism, that's where there's sort of a common anger. But the remedy is sort of, who do you blame beyond the establishment? What are your remedies? Then start to diverge a lot. They both want to figure out. I mean, I think there's both sort of anger at economic inequality and inequity, but the remedy from the alt-right has a lot to do with help us, the white working class, exclude others, and that becomes to diverge quite considerably from the remedy that Bernie Sanders offers in terms of bigger government and different type of social safety net.
Mm-hmm. How much much of this, I mean, we saw the Hillary Clinton ad. We aren't playing it because there are so many visuals. Her ad, which is going to start running, I would imagine, immediately because she's giving this speech today. There's a grand wizard of the Ku Klux Klan who's featured. David Duke is featured. It's really tying this alt-right and maybe Breitbart movement to really frightening white nationalists.
Yeah. And I think one of the questions of the fairness of that ad, and I don't know the answer. I don't think anyone knows the answer, is how big a component of the alt-right is that type of racism and sort of explicitly white nationalist. It's part of it, maybe even a significant part of it. Is it a big part of the Breitbart philosophy? They would argue no. Others think yes. Some in Breitbart don't even consider themselves part of the alt-right. It's very sort of very fuzzy and amorphous. I think it's fair of the Clinton campaign to tie them together because while Breitbart itself has not been explicit in its racism, at least to my reading, it has certainly engaged in a lot of race baiting and encouraged that in others. It's to say all's fair in politics.
So where do we even get this phrase alt-right? It's just appeared recently. Where did it appear? How did it appear?
The phrase actually goes back, from what I can tell, at least 7 years, maybe 8 years, and from a variety of different web-based movements. The most famous proponent of it is a guy named Richard Spencer, who's essentially an online writer, provocateur in the space. If you had asked me 8-9 months ago, I mean, before Trump, before I spent a lot of time in Breitbart, I would have actually considered that to be the fringe of the fringe, the following that we're best not to pay attention to. It's really Breitbart over the last year that has brought that alt-right sensibility into the mainstream, and Trump and Breitbart together have sort of marched it forward, shedding in some ways some of the more explicit aspects of the racism of the alt-right, but I think some of the same sort of philosophical and I think demographic identification that drives the alt-right. There is a lot of anti-multiculturalism, anti-immigrant, anti-others that is still that's in Breitbart and very explicitly, even if it's not sort of expressed in the same way of eugenics or white nationalism.
Mm. Does it make good political sense, do you think, for Hillary Clinton to be doing ads on this and to do a speech sometime today on the alt-right?
Yeah, I think so. I think the where she's going is to make sure that Trump and Bannon are perceived as not mainstream candidates, that they're fringe, they've aligned with the fringe, they've made a step into respectability, but they still have one foot in the kook world, and not let people, lots and lots of people out there who don't particularly like Hillary, to forget really what Trump is about.
Let's go to John in Rock County next. Hi, John.
Hello, and thank you for having me. I see the political structure changing in America. I do see an elitist right and an elitist left. I think Donald Trump has some really huge issues and barriers when it comes to race, but I think Hillary Clinton has some of the same issues when it comes to corruption. The only way I think we will see changes is if anybody ever has the ability to get things changed where we change corporate structures, because corporate structures right now are all at the bit, I mean, they push everything to the top and they push wages all the way down to zero to the bottom. And unless they start setting solid structures where it's like government pay issues into corporate structures and make them required to have that, you're going to have certain things. And for non-for-profits, they should only be allowing their executives and owners, or I guess whoever it is, to make a minimum of like 10 times over the whatever our minimum wage person, something like that. That way it really works. Otherwise, when you start, because they're corporations, they were founded by the United States government, they're created out of nothing, and then they allow people who create these things. Next, you're going to have corporations voting, which is another thing that I could see in the future, because they have rights. Oh, my goodness. I'll take my comments off.
John, if you don't mind my asking, who are you going to vote for?
That's going to be way up in the air still to this day. I mean, really, I'm up in the air.
I can tell. All right. Thanks very much. Ken.
There's unpacking a couple things from John's call, which is and the fact that it's up in the air between two very different candidates is reflective of the fact that somehow through this process we've come out with probably the two most unpopular politicians in America as our final two choices, with all due respects to the minor candidates. And there are, I think, a lot of people there who are going to vote for the candidate who they who'll be voting against one candidate. Not for Hillary, but against Trump. Not for Trump, but against Hillary. And I think that's actually why the explanation of why she's going to be attacking him around the wall, right, to drive up Trump's negatives, not drive up her positives. And, you know, it's interesting, John's comments about corporations, because that actually does reflect a little bit of my conversation with Steve Bannon. He's a Harvard Business School guy, as you mentioned, Kathleen. But a lot of his energy is sort of driven by his anger at his former classmates, who he thinks have turned American corporations from, and I don't know if there's any history to support this, but American corporations who cared about communities into very bottom line, ruthless organizations who don't give a damn about American workers. Mm. And that's the energy that drives him, and that's an energy that drives, you know, both the right and the left.
Yeah, was he part of that, though, at Goldman Sachs? Did he contribute to the very thing that he's railing against?
Probably not directly. You know, his world was, now you raise it, maybe that is a fair question that I didn't ask him. You know, he was a media mergers guy. I think that was his business. And, you know, now that you raise it, I think that's actually a really interesting question. Mm. Should have asked him myself.
Well, you'll have another chance.
Maybe.
Has he responded to your Vanity Fair article?
He hasn't. So Steve has gone very quiet to the media. He's done no interviews. Oddly enough, and I have very mixed feelings about this, Breitbart actually excerpted all the favorable or non-critical parts of my Vanity Fair
really?
One ran it on Breitbart. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
They've actually done that a couple times to me, and I just don't know what to make of that.
Huh. Well, just call Steve and say, hey, dude, let's meet at the coffee shop 24/7 at your disposal. George in Missouri is next. Hi, George.
Hey, how are you all?
Good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Just got a quick question for you. Do you guys think the alt-right is to hate President Clinton more, less, or the same than they hate President Obama? You know, because you talk to folks that espouse this movement, and I think a lot of times we kind of forget in all of these other issues just how much they hate our current president. And, you know, a lot of them feel that Obama is driving a cultural wedge in our country and creating an us versus them culture, and it's kind of the opposite of what a lot of other folks think in terms of his ability to unify different groups of people. And so, you know, it seems quite likely that Hillary Clinton is going to be our next president, and so I'd like to hear your thoughts and you know, some conversation about what are the next 4 years going to look like for the alt-right and for, you know, people who are participating in our democracy. Hmm. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Interesting thoughts.
So let's actually talk about it's an interesting question. I think the first question is, who do they hate the most? And the answer to that is neither Obama or Clinton, but the Republican establishment.
Hmm.
They hate Paul Ryan more than anyone else. They consider them quislings. That's the word that Bannon used with me about Ryan and John McCain and others. So that's enemy number one, and that's why I think that's who they ultimately want to beat more than Clinton. I actually think it's a pretty close tie for second between Obama and Clinton. They hate them both more. There's more energy, I think, around hating Hillary Clinton right now because of the times, and they've hated her. I think they've hated her for longer. But there's a lot of hate to spread around there, and I don't know which one stops at 10 and which one goes up to 11 on the hate meter. I actually think, question it, of what happens in the next 4 years. There's a lot of energy in losing. There's a lot of energy in being the disloyal opposition. It's actually very hard to govern. In some ways, they're better off losing. It's just a question of how they lose. Mm-hmm. They lose in a way that discredits their movement, or they lose in a way that makes them feel like they've been cheated and drive their anger for, you know, for 4 or 8 years. And as they work on down ballot races as well as presidential races.
And the anger toward Paul Ryan is for what reason?
I think it's betrayal from a family member. So the, you know, their notion is it's not really Democrat. There's not that much difference between Democrats and Republicans when you get to the establishment. They're in bed together. They're all part of this party of Davos. They've all sold themselves out to corporate interests. But it's worse when that comes from someone who claims to represent the interests of the conservative movement, and they feel betrayed by Ryan and Eric Cantor before them, Mitch McConnell. I heard a lot of nasty things about Mitch McConnell when I was in Kentucky a few weeks ago. I think it's worse when someone who's supposed to be on your side stabs you in the back, in their view.
Mm. Our number is 800-486-8655. Hillary Clinton's speech is just beginning in Reno, so Scotty has an eye on that, ear on that, or both on that, and he will be letting us know some of the more pertinent things that she is saying so we can get Ken to respond to it. Our number here is 800-486-8655. Kevin in Baraboo is next. Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, this is actually Kevin outside of Merrimack, but I'm from Baraboo. I'm at my studio working on my metal sculpture. My imagination is overactive again, and just thoughts that recurring about the fact that Trump and his campaign manager somehow are implying that they're going to lose the election, and it's going to be for what they do afterwards. And I guess that, again, my overactive imagination is saying that, okay, if this alt-right group, you know, puts together a movement, can they create a revolution? And the fact that, you know, they probably have a lot of NRA people in there that really like guns a lot, you know, could it be a really nasty thing? And I certainly hope not, but, you know, that would be my fear, and I'll take whatever reactions you have off the air. Thank you.
All right,
you.
Kevin, thanks.
Well, I certainly hope not. You know, my father-in-law has been saying for years that who's a liberal, has been saying the revolution is coming, and I've never really taken him seriously. Don't tell him that. But you know, I do think there's an anger in this country. I don't see it turning into violence. There's an outlet for that, and that's called the web. And there's a lot of energy there, sharing of anger and hate. And I guess I'll just hope that it doesn't turn into anything worse than that.
We'll pause for a moment and return. Ken Stern is our guest this hour. He wrote a piece that caught our attention in Vanity Fair this month's issue. He spent quite a bit of time interviewing the new campaign chair for Donald Trump, the CEO of Trump's campaign, and he has written about his time with Steve Bannon, the man behind Breitbart and now running the Trump campaign. Very, very interesting piece appearing in the August edition of Vanity Fair. And Ken is also writing a book right now, Republicans Like Me. He writes for a lot of different publications, and he was the CEO of National Public Radio for some time. So we'll be back to you momentarily here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655 is our number. We told you that Hillary Clinton will soon begin. She hasn't started speaking yet. She will soon begin her speech on the alt-right, which is taking place during this hour in Reno. Joe in Ripon is our next caller. Hello, Joe.
Hi. Glad to be on the air with you. The gentleman I just talked to, I explained to him, I've got four children. All four of them were diehard Bernie backers. But I work in the town, the birthplace of the Republican Party, Little Ripon.
Mm-hmm.
And the bulk of the population here are either non-college graduates and many not even high school graduates. And they are diehard Trump followers. And I think one of the differences, I think, I can't remember who it was that mentioned, couldn't understand the difference between the Bernie followers and the Trump followers, just that there was a dissatisfaction with the establishment. I think one of the differences, and I've spoken to my children about this, is that most of the Bernie followers are tech savvy, media, social media savvy, so they follow and they understand. Many of the ones who are Trump followers that I've associated with in the Fox Valley for 35 years, because I grew up in New York City, so I know Trump very well. But anyway, when Bernie went out, my children kept wondering, what are we going to do now? What I told them to do was follow the history of the Clintons, in particular Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. As they, again, because they're media savvy, they started looking at what was the movement against the Clintons? You mentioned, I get a brain cramp right now. But anyway, they realized that this has been going on, and some of the stuff that's been said about her, you know, are falsehoods. And when they followed up on Trump and talked to some of my relatives still in New York, they got a pretty clear picture. So I think the Bernie followers look at the bigger picture and understand that if Trump wins, their movement, their Bernie movement, is going to go nowhere, as opposed to if they allow Clinton to win. At least they'll have a chance to maintain their movement alive and maybe make some changes in the future.
Ken.
So I think that's probably true. I'm not sure I would, and certainly the Sanders followers tend to be younger and therefore media savvy. I would say that the alt-right movement, the subject of some of our conversation here today, is also fairly media savvy. It grew out of the internet. It really is an internet movement more than a traditional media movement or a traditional organizing movement. And they are very good at trolling. They're very good at social media. They're very good at a lot of the components that build awareness on the web. And I think a lot of the politics today, and it's actually my book is ultimately about that, is the politics of polarization and politics of identity, less into the politics of actually who the candidates are and what they stand for. So even though we have two of the most divisive candidates in history, and this is just my opinion, perhaps the worst major party candidate in Donald Trump in history, just in terms of his qualifications and the way he puts together a campaign. It's actually still a pretty close election.
Yes, it is.
Even if it's 4 or 5 points, mm-hmm. maybe six. George McGovern lost by 25 points. Barry Goldwater lost by 25 points. That's when people move between sides. People are pretty tied into what side of the aisle they're on now, and they don't move very much. Clinton will win because maybe a few Republicans will vote for her, but more importantly, the rest will just stay home. They mm-hmm. won't vote for her. They won't be attracted to her. They'll just stay home, and that will give her a margin of victory if she wins.
Yeah. Let's talk just a little bit, because we haven't mentioned it yet. Steve Bannon's connections with people in Europe taking on the Brexit vote campaign.
Yeah, so one of the things Bannon did in his remodel of Breitbart was to launch Breitbart London, which I always thought was a curious thing, but it played on the same types of nativism and populism and nationalism that it plays on the States. And they built a pretty powerful presence in England, and they're part of I don't know how important it was in British politics, but they were part of the Brexit movement, and they see a natural alliance with the Brexit folks. The Brexit Brexit folks were over stumping for Trump yesterday, and I think they see a natural alliance with Marie Le Pen and the National Front in France as well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much, Joe, for your call. We go to Vince in Waterford. Hi, Vince.
I'm in Watertown. I can't believe that the American public is so uninformed and misinformed, and the lack of critical thinking in America right now is frightening. This is the same movement that took place in Germany and Italy pre-World War II. I'm a naturalized citizen. I came over here in 1959, and I can't believe that these are the same issues, the same tactics that were used in Germany and Italy before World War II. And my question is, where is the media, the print, the radio, and TV, in providing factual evidence so that people could make an informed decision? But how are you ever going to talk, be able to discern and talk to people who won't even admit that the scientific method is worthwhile? You know, we're not basing anything on facts and evidence anymore. We're basing it on vitriol, hate, opinions. It's really scaring me.
Thank you for your call, Vince. Ken?
I was actually on another public radio show last week, and another guest was a guy named Rick Wilson, who has been, I didn't realize at the time, but he's a Republican operative of long standing, and he's been critical of Trump and Breitbart and had his been trolled and attacked, and his personal accounts opened and put on the air, put online, and that of his family. And he was quite direct. He said, these guys are the Nazis. And at one level, you know, I always object to those types of characterizations. They haven't killed millions and millions. But I think there is, it's not also a crazy analogy, because some of the same types of tactics, as the caller suggested, exploited the anger and after World War One and brought Hitler to power. I don't think it's fair to draw the analogy directly, but it's not a crazy analogy to think about in terms of some of the German for Germany and the Americans for America pieces of it. I do think the media has been, I mean, it's all out there about Trump and Bannon, and no one can miss it, both good and bad. The information is there. But the right has actually been very good, starting with Fox News, about discrediting what they call the mainstream media. And people who are inclined to believe in Trump and believe in Breitbart just don't give any credence to the New York Times or NPR or to any number of outlets and their reporting.
Mm-hmm. What do you think Bannon has up his sleeve for the next how many days, 60-some, 70-some, before the election?
You know, I think he's a smart guy, but he's also a first-time campaign operator. I think he's going to be good at honing messages that attract a certain audience, but I just don't know that he's going to be able to bring any real rigor to that, to Donald Trump and the Trump campaign. If he does, you know, he's a bit of a miracle worker. You know, they've had a decent few days, but that's happened before, and then Trump has gone off in some other direction.
Right, I know. It's hard to figure. Yeah. One more call. We have about a minute left. Lorraine in Brookfield. Hi.
Hi. Well, I wanted to echo what the gentleman who was the immigrant had to say. As an American who was born here, I'm shocked at the amount of air that's given to alt-right now. Everything that Donald Trump does, he's a huckster, and he's selling his product, and I don't believe for one minute that he can't win.
Ken.
Yeah, well, it's so I think that's interesting. I agree, huckster is a great term for him, and I think it's right. So people, including me, I've done it on the show, sort of down-talk his chances of winning, but he's only, you know, even in the grand scheme of things, only a few points behind, and there's 70 days, as you say, to the election, and a lot of things can happen, and that's, you know, a scary proposition.
Ken, when does the book come out?
Oh, good grief. thank you for asking. It's still being written. It's publishing fall of 2017.
Okay. Thanks so much for being with us, Ken.
Thanks for having me, Kathleen.
Ken Stern. Yeah, I enjoyed it, too. The piece that he wrote, and it's on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, appearing in the Vanity Fair, and gives background information about the man who's now running Donald Trump's campaign, Steve Bannon. And we thank him for his time. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. News is coming up from National Public Radio, and then a book about, I read all but 75 pages. I couldn't stay up to finish it last night. It's a big book. Bobby Kennedy.